Welcome to the Wayne Bennett Podcast, celebrating West Virginia people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now here's your host, Wayne Bennett.
Welcome to Wayne Bennett's Podcast. This is episode 127. It's January 29th, 2024. It's a wintry day outside. And today our guest is returning. He's been described as an artist, Bill Bondsman, and many other things. But here lately, he's become an author, and he is running for public office. We're going to talk a little bit. Mr. Gary Vaughn, welcome.
Good morning, Wayne. Good. Glad you had me on again.
Tell me about this book that you've written.
Well, it's 20-some years in the making. I've been taking notes as a fugitive recovery agent for long as I can remember, and piling them up. And last year I got it together and decided I was going to start writing. And that's what I did. It took about 9 months, but I've got it together and it's published.
What's the name of it?
It's called There's a Meth Head in Your Dryer.
Well, that's catchy.
Oddly enough, it is. It's Tales of an Appalachian Fugitive Recovery Agent. And it really gives people an insight of what's going on in the criminal world here. If you don't work in it, you just don't understand.
Now, it describes your job as a bail bondsman, and you refer to this as fugitive recovery. Is that like the bounty hunter?
It is, but people that actually do fugitive recovery don't really like the term bounty hunter or the television shows associated with it because it's nothing like that. It gives people a false view of how it really is.
Uh-huh. Now, a couple of guys that I know in the past, Lee Maynard and Scott McClanahan, have both written books about Southern Appalachia or Appalachia. And Scott McClanahan's book was called Crapalachia. I don't know whether you've ever read that book or not, but and it was pretty well received from the critics. Lee Maynard's book called Crum, as in Crum, West Virginia, was also a very good seller, but both of those books never made Tamarack shelf, and I don't think they made the Raleigh County Library shelf. I don't think your book's going to make that shelf.
I don't either. Several people who have read mine, it's all 5-star reviews on Amazon. I'm very lucky and I'm humbled over that, but several people have asked me if I'm going to submit it. I don't think it would pass their test up there.
Now, how many years have you been a private investigator in bail bondsman?
Oh, my, over 20 years.
Wow. So you've had a lot of stories. Well, this book is 160 pages long.
It is.
And some of your job that you've been doing besides fugitive recovery, I mean, you've served eviction notices, you've repossessed automobiles.
When you're a bail bondsman and finding people is your business, people will seek you out to find their assets and to serve evictions. Yeah, it's all finding people for whatever the reason.
Now, you've told a lot of these stories on the internet, and people kept encouraging you to write a book, and that's what you've done. Well, your stories include, and I have read your book on Kindle. I haven't got hard copy yet. I was kind of waiting on a book signing, but your stories include animals like pigs and horses and fish and cats and chickens, and they're humorous. It's a humorous look at bad situations.
But it's a funny. It's finding the humor in dark spots is what it really is.
You know, when I read the book, I found myself laughing out loud at certain situations. And other times I was just shaking at my head in disbelief, and I don't get shocked too often, but a few of those stories really shocked me. But actually, one of the things that got you going were you did these witty posters. Can you tell me about the posters?
My wanted posters, yes, sir. That's what really got the public pushing me to write a book is when people are wanted, I found a different way. First of all, when social media came out, it changed bail bonds completely. It changed the whole game. You're not out searching courthouse records like you used to have to do. You're not out knocking on doors like you have to do. You post these people on social media, and somebody out there knows where they are, and they're happy to call and tell you, especially if there's a reward. So I got witty with it. If you make them funny and you make them witty, even if you make them kind of ugly, it makes people share them and more people comment on them, whether it's positive or negative, but it brings those to the top of the news feeds and the calls start coming in.
And you must have been pretty good at what you've done, because you stayed pretty busy with this. And in one segment of your book, you give us a version of phone calls that you have received while working as a bail bondsman.
Oh my goodness, yes.
And I used to love the old John Boy and Billy show and stuff like that when they would do the prank phone calls, Roy Mercer and those guys. I mean, they were something else. Well, you don't have to do the prank. They call you. I don't guess you can record them without their okay, but I mean, you can write down what they say. And that part of your book is hilarious.
It really is. It's funnier than... You really couldn't write some of those things. You couldn't sit down and come up with them. And these people that come up with it, their honesty is just hilarious.
And you pointed out that a lot of the people that you deal with are bad actors, and they're not good impersonators or fake accents or anything like that. And so a lot of that weakness, even though it's kind of graphic, makes your job a little bit easier.
It does. After doing it for a long time, you can pick these things out.
Now, unfortunately, most of the problems that the people have, or some of the causes of the people troubles with the law, have been instigated by drug usage. And we didn't have this severe of a problem 50 years ago. And
it's going downhill fast.
I mean, propane huffers and things like that, I just can't even imagine it. Some of the details that you give, like rats in the laundry and the Ford Ranger providing the electricity for a mobile home. I mean, but one quote that you had is, I have learned that if your work immerses you into a bad situation, you have best find humor whenever you can. And you've done that.
I have. I learned that years ago. I'm a combat veteran. The 101st Airborne, I was in Desert Storm. And I learned that young. I went in that young. And I'm still friends with those guys that came back with me today. I still see them on a regular basis to talk to them. And we learned that those of us who laughed through it and saw and took really legit looked at the bright side. I know that's an old saying, but it's true. I feel like we fared better. And I've certainly seen people that have done this job and been police officer jobs that are just jaded and hardened and depressed. And I refuse to let it do that to me. I'm going to look at the bright side of it.
Now, in your job, you wear a badge. I mean, how do you get that badge? I mean, how do you get the certification?
Well, it's changed over the years. It used to be just anyone could work for a bonding company. Now you got to get a license through the state. Now it goes through the West Virginia Insurance Commissioner. And if you get a job with a bail bondsman these days, it's a much bigger deal. Of course, some of us were grandfathered in, didn't have to jump through every hoop, but there are a lot of hoops. And insurance is high. It's hard to get a job doing this, but I've been doing it a long time.
Now, the dark side... One particular story is a sad in your book is a young man who is probably a pretty good fella. He's had some problems with the law, but in his particular story, he's tried to do the right thing, and he ends up, I don't want to give too many spoilers, but he ends up committing suicide because his family actually turned against him.
If you know that, that's the last chapter of my book. I saved that until last because there's humor in a little bit of everything, but certainly not everything. That's a sad story, and there's no humor in that at all. And I wanted readers to understand that even though all these things happened to all these people and all these funny things really occurred, that's just a small part of it. It's really sad.
Now, you, after writing the book, sitting down and writing, which you say took about 9 months.
It did.
How do you get something published? I mean...
The whole world there has changed as well. My goodness, I've read so much there is to read. Pretty much the internet has changed it all. Amazon has changed it all. I did my book through Amazon, and so many people are doing that now. I wouldn't say it's an easy process, but it's easier than dealing with publishers. You can do everything yourself if you have if you have the proper editing done, and you have, of course, I did my own artwork for the cover, so I didn't have to pay someone for that. My girlfriend has worked for the newspaper for 33 years, so I have a built-in editor. So a lot of these things came natural to me, and I got to bypass a lot of hoops. But you can do it on Amazon yourself pretty much. The key after that is getting it marketed, letting people know that that's on Amazon and to look for it.
Now, another part in your book, you have a picture of a view that this emphasizes the case of serious. And one of the things you put out is when you confront someone, you have to face everything with pretty much the same type of attitude, because when you confront someone who may have been guilty of a minor violation, they can be just as dangerous as someone who's committed murder.
Or more so, I have found. In West Virginia, I've done bail bonds all over. Our company's has spread. But in West Virginia, it seems that the smaller crimes are the ones that people miss court on, that people run on. You don't see in the paper, so-and-so fled this murder charge, or so-and-so fled this DUI cause and death charge. You just don't see that. Those people come to court. It's the DUIs and the shoplifters and the driving charges that run, as a rule.
Let's go back to the publishing part. Amazon, once you write it, you've done the cover. Do you tell them how many copies you want personally, or how does that?
I do. They sell to the public, and I get royalties on that, and I can buy my own and sell them anywhere I like. And I'll tell you something funny about that. The book's been out for almost 2 weeks. It's doing really well. It's doing very well. There are many people out there that already have their books and have asked me to sign them. I don't have my own copies yet. Where they had to print me a box and ship them, I still don't have mine. So it's kind of funny that people are reading my book out there and I haven't even seen it yet.
Now, it is, the book is on the Goodreads list now.
It is, yes.
And that's
because
that's
of the five-star reviews happened quickly and they picked it up.
And so that adds a little more of a national flavor. But the thing, too, where some it may offend some people, it does take place in Appalachia. Some people say, well, that's just people making fun of our culture or our society. But we've had the Beverly Hillbillies, who actually came out of Tennessee, but part of Appalachia, the real McCoys, all those guys. And from a national scale, and it might dictate the future and the success of your book, from a national scale, people like to laugh at us.
Well, it just happens to take place in the Appalachians. And I'll tell you, I didn't specify some of those stories. I've traveled a lot. I've arrested people in Miami. I've arrested people. Our company's been as far as Washington State. You know, I've been to Florida, Texas, of course, the Carolinas, you name it. I've pretty much been there. But most of these stories are based right here at home, almost every one of them. But I have found criminals are criminals. They really are. It doesn't matter where you go. They may have a little accent or be from a bigger city, but they act pretty much the same.
I would recommend that. I don't know exactly how all this works, but I would recommend it, you know, getting the attention of some of the magazines like Impost Magazine or The Rumpus or Huffington Post and some of those. And I'm sure they get thousands a day, you know, with the number of books that are out there. But from past history, that they have been attentive to these types of books. And I don't know whether you send them an actual book or you send them a copy of certain stories, but I do think it has a potential of doing quite well on a national scale. I wrote a little, review myself, and after I read the book, and I read the book in 2 days, and I probably could have read it in one, but I wanted something to read the next day, so I set it down. But this is what I wrote. So Gary Vaughn's book is both powerful and inanely funny. His humor is in dire situations is skillfully handled with an open and fresh style of writing. When you pick up the book, slowing down is not an option. Some chapters should not be read right after a meal, but overall, you'll be left hanging to digest more of Gary's stories and anxiously anticipate his next book. And I liked it.
I appreciate that. Those kind words, especially coming from you.
Listen, not only have you written a book and you've got your hands full publishing or getting the marketing part, but you also have decided to run for a public office. I didn't say political office because it's a nonpartisan position. It's something that you've been actually acquainted with for some time. Tell us what's going on.
Well, I decided that it's time. A couple of magistrates are retiring. Crime rates went up so much that the state has seen fit to even give us an extra magistrate spot this time around, and we need it. That's based on crime rates around the county of which county gets how many magistrates. So there are three spots available, and I decided that it was my time to jump in. And I'm glad you said that it's not a political office. It is a public office. So many people don't realize that. So many people will look at you and say, any candidate, and say, oh, well, they're way too liberal for me to vote for that, or they're way too far right for me to vote for that. When it comes to magistrate, none of that comes into play. And if it's that kind of person, if you think that kind of person, you don't want to vote for that kind of person. Magistrates are fair and impartial. You come in there in front of a magistrate, no matter what it's for. First of all, the defense attorneys and the prosecutors, 9 times out of 10, have this worked out before they ever come in front of you and you're signing your name. But if they don't work it out and you've got to make a decision, it's who's right and wrong in the eyes of the West Virginia State Code, period. It doesn't matter what their political parties are, never even come into play. And that's a good thing about the magistrates we've had here. We've been very lucky with fantastic magistrates in this county. That's not true for the whole state. You've seen magistrates in trouble in other counties, but we've been very lucky here, and I'd like to keep that going.
You say we got an extra one this year?
We do. It's a sixth. We've had 5 magistrates for many years in West Virginia. They call those, and a lot of people get that confused too when they look on the ballot or look on the Secretary of State's office. It's divisions 1 through 6. Those divisions aren't areas. It's just a seat. It's 6 seats. We've had 5, and this election, you'll be voting for a 6th open spot that a lot of people filed for.
How did they determine the divisions? Is it geographical?
It's not geographical at all, and that's most people think that it's not. I don't know why they really call it divisions, because it's kind of a misnomer, really. But it's simply just a seat is all it is. They're just 6. And when you run, the reason they have divisions is when you run from one specifically. So if you were a sitting magistrate and I wanted to run against you, you're Division 1. I got to go in and write Division 1. I'm running against Wayne Bennett. And another magistrate, if someone wants to run against them, they would file for that division. That's all that really means.
Okay, so now this was will be decided in the primary in May.
It will.
And there, from my last understanding, there's 20 people running?
A few even popped up this morning, I think.
Oh, really?
They filed last minute Saturday. Courthouse opened half a day Saturday, and a few people waited till the very last minute.
Yeah. And so when you file, you go in and you pay a filing fee, which is a percentage of the...
I don't know how they figure that filing fee. That's actually a good question. I know that the filing fees are very different across the board.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was for some reason, I was thinking it was a percentage of the pay that you were going to receive, but I don't
know. It may very well be. It makes sense, because I know the judge's filing fee is quite more than the magistrate's, so it makes sense.
Now, the consensus, you said we've had some good magistrates. It's a 4-year term.
It is.
Now, you actually, and I think it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing, but you ran for magistrate in a write-in?
I filed as a write-in candidate after and right before the elections, and no one wins a write-in election, and everyone knows that. But I did that. There was a couple of reasons I did that at the time, and I was actually successful doing what I was trying to do. Got my name out there, for one thing.
So the 20 people running, they pick the division they're running in, and you've got 6 divisions. That's quite a few people. I think in your division, what, 4 or 5 people?
I have 3 opponents, yes.
Yeah, that's...
Unless somebody popped up this morning and I haven't looked yet. But I'm told a few people showed up on the site this morning in a couple of the other divisions. I haven't checked myself.
Yeah, but unlike other offices, you're really basically selling yourself. I mean, you're not. Is there a reason to be a debate or?
Not really. I mean, the rules are even very specific. You can't run on any particular platform, because how can you really do that if every case is different and every case you got to decide who is right by the letter of the West Virginia law. And if you don't, if I side for you, if you sue someone tomorrow and I side for you, and the other side thinks that that wasn't legal and wasn't right, they can appeal that to the circuit court judge, and the circuit court judge can overturn that. Rarely happens in Raleigh County because we have such good magistrates. But yeah, it's really just selling yourself as a, you know, does this guy know the law? Has this guy been around the law? And that's what you're looking for in any of these magistrate races. I tell everybody, look, don't vote for someone because they're your friend. Vote for somebody that's fit for this job. This isn't a regular, like you said, political office. This is a public office. It's very different.
I'm sure there have been people since you've registered, filed to run. There have been a lot of people coming up or sending you on social media, I'm going to vote for it. You got my vote. I'm going to support you.
Absolutely.
But just looking at some of the situation in the past, there's 21% in West Virginia, there's about 21% of the people who are eligible to vote don't even get registered. And then of the ones that are registered this last election, I think only 43% voted.
That is accurate.
Now, this next election may be more because it is a presidential election and it might bring more voters out.
It's going to bring more voters out for that and a couple other reasons. First of all, you've got an extra magistrate seat with a lot of people running, and you've got a lot. The Beckley's got the mayor is up for election, and you've got circuit court judge seats,
yeah.
Board of Ed. There's a lot of things are coming up that will involve more people. You know, there's a lot of people out there that, well, I'm going to go vote because so-and-so is running for Board of Education. Well, they're still going to vote. So I think it's going to be a lot more than 43% this time around.
Yeah. Are you excited about this? Do you like the competition?
I don't mind the competition at all. I feel like that I hate to say the phrase, it is what it is, but it really is. I can't make you come out and vote. I can just let you know that I'm doing this, and I can let you know that what I feel like my qualifications are over my competition, and that's all I can really do. It's up to the people to do that.
Well, Gary, I'm going to give you a chance. Tell us why we should vote for Gary Barham.
Well, if nothing else, I got to look at my competition again. I don't know who, like I said, I'm not sure who all's filed, but I certainly have more experience being around the magistrate court system and the legal system. Not only just being bail bondsman and doing the fugitive recovery and the PI work, there's a whole lot more to it than that. A lot of people think you have to be an attorney to represent someone in court. Well, you certainly don't. On these evictions, the people that I've helped over the years, I've represented apartment complexes, renters. I've been to court with landlords whose tenants are not paying them and taking advantage of them. I've been to court for them and fought for them in magistrate court hundreds of times. And the other way around, I've went for renters whose landlords were doing them wrong. And I've went and I've helped do that. I've testified in countless cases. I understand how it works. None of my competition has done that. None of them are familiar with the system. And that's a big thing, especially in a small place like this in southern West Virginia. It really helps to just know and understand. Anyone who goes in, one of my opponents actually called the courthouse. Now, this is all over the courthouse, and it's kind of a laughing matter, but it's really not. Called the courthouse one or two days before he filed and asked, what was a magistrate's duties? What do they do? What's their schedule? That is not the kind of person. That person may have several thousand friends, maybe. I don't know. Maybe they're a fantastic person, but they're not fit for that job if they don't know what it's about. Anybody who gets in that job that doesn't understand it is going to start on a learning curve right away. And is that what you can we afford that here with the crime going up? So much so that we're getting an extra spot. We can't afford that. You need someone in who understands it and can start day one doing things.
Now, the magistrate position, they do come under an umbrella of a judge, though, don't they?
Absolutely.
I mean, if they seek legal advice, they can go to a certain judge.
Absolutely. There's always a chief magistrate and a chief judge in the county, and the judge's doors have always been open for any questions. And if you have a question about a case, you don't have to find right now. You can say, you know, I've taken this all under advisement. I'm going to make a decision. I'm going to place an order into the system, and you can go talk to the judge about that or look up the case law.
There was a period of time that I was called to jury duty about four different times in a 10-year period, I think. And I actually served on a magistrate court once, and I went in and they were trying to pick the six-person jury. and it was an assault and battery case. And I knew I wasn't going to get picked because I knew the arresting officer. I worked with him at one time before he became a policeman. I had a brother-in-law who was a deputy sheriff. I knew one of the people involved. It wasn't been charged, but was there when the thing happened. I went to high school with, and I gave them all those reasons, and they picked me, and they said, "We admire your honesty. We're going to take you." And so, and it was, to me, it was just a cut and dry case. I mean, the person hit another person, and they admitted to it and didn't argue it. I don't even know why we had a trial by jury. But
they generally are cut and dry, Wayne. It's not like in People's Court or what people watch on TV where, oh my gosh, the jury's been out 2 days, what's going to happen? 99 out of 100 times, it's a clear-cut case. Everyone knows who's right and who's wrong. But somebody is what you call took it to the box because they didn't like the plea and they thought, well, there's any chance of me getting out of this, I have to go for it.
You have been described as provocative, thought-provoking, effective, and fair. And that's a pretty good description. I mean, that's something that that I think you would consider that an asset. Is there anything else that you want to bring up that we haven't talked about as far as...
No, just get out there on Amazon, look for that book. It's abrasive. Is that a fair description? It's abrasive, but it's factual and it's hilarious.
One other thing I want to ask you, though, strategy. On the magistrate, what have you got planned? Are you going to, I mean, I know signs and probably, or...
Yeah, I'm certainly going to do some signs. I don't have a strategy. I don't feel like I need one. I'm already very active in the community. If there's something going on, I have got something to do with it. So I'm going to do the same thing I've been doing for 6 months. I'm going to tell everyone what I'm doing and why they need to vote for me. And I'm going to keep doing the community things that I'm doing. And I meet people doing what I do. I meet people from all facets of life. You know, I host trivia events. I do fundraisers. We just did the one at Calasinos. They do every year. I helped with that. For hospice, $8,500. People, and I had nothing to do with me. Nothing. It was the people that came in and donated and helped. I MC those. I go around to the businesses getting the things we auction off. I meet people doing that. I host a bike night at Calcina. So the whole motorcycle community that can't go to other places because those things tend to get dangerous in other places. You know, everybody knows how that is. We've got a nice, clean family bike night up there. And it's a whole group of people that you just don't run into everywhere. I do the art shows. And that's a whole other group of people that come to the art shows that we put together and the art exhibits. And I'm just going to keep doing the things that I do. I'm going to keep dealing with all these facets of people. I'm just going to tell them all what I'm doing. I think that's all I can do.
For the soldiers, too, that there for a while, that just turned into something that to a point you couldn't handle.
I had to give it up. It was awesome, and I had a lot of help. But when you get into doing charity work, you'll get a lot of help in short spurts, but it never lasts.
Yeah,
I had so many. I'd have to go back on my Facebook and search. I don't want to lie to you. I think it was well over 300 packages that we shipped to troops overseas. It got so many packages that I was having trouble getting addresses. You know, for a while, you know, do you know anybody overseas? Send me their address. We've got a box to send them.
Yeah.
And for a while it rolled. And then we started just putting big boxes together and sending them to entire units. And here it is. And places got to, with like Calasinos, John Mize's law office, Tobacco Town in Beaver, Lewis Chevrolet, so many of them got together and got me things and helped. And when it got down to, I was shipping it with my own money. I had a Facebook or I had a PayPal account where people were sending money for me to ship, but it got to the point where I was doing it with my own money. Then people like Calcinas, John Mize came one day and got a whole trunk load of packages and loaded them up. He said, "How many can get in the trunk, put them in there?" And he took them to the post office and mailed them. And you know, I enjoyed doing things. And as a troop, I know how awesome it was to get a package in the mail. It was just great. It was the high point of no matter what your day was like over there. If you got something in the mail, that was the high point of your day. And that's why I did that. And I'm going to do it again, but I had to put it off for a while. It's overwhelming.
I can understand that. Well, Gary, I appreciate you coming by and talking to us. And And good luck to you on your book and your magistrate position, and we'll be seeing you around town.
Thank you for having me again. I really appreciate it. I enjoy this.
Okay. Anyone else out there would like to be on the program, just hit me up at awbennett50@gmail.com, and we'll get you on here. And remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. This is Wayne Bennett. God bless you.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. Today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I